prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
On a day like today, we pass the time away, writing love letters in the sand.
All righty, folks, I hate to cut that off, but I think that may give you a hint as to who our guest is tonight, our special guest for the first 15 minutes of the broadcast. Mr. Pat Boone. That song goes back a few years, and so do I, by the way. I remember this gentleman very well. I watch him on TV. Now, if you're as young as I am, you all remember him too, I'm sure. Mr. Pat Boone, are you there?
I am here, yes. And that was some 60 years ago.
Wow.
I didn't even say that number, but then again, it's sort of a badge of honor. And
yes, it is.
Blessing.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's an honor to have you. And I can remember, I won't get on topic of the movie, but I have to mention this. I remember one time you came out on TV on stage, you told the MC that you always rolled your pant legs up before you came out on the stage. You had to get them down real quick. Do you remember that?
No.
You said you always rolled your pant legs up before you came out on the stage. I guess it's kind of a nervous habit, and it called you up, and you weren't expecting it. So, anyway.
Well,
I remember that.
I don't remember it, but that doesn't say anything because there's a lot of things I don't remember now.
Well, before I get to Pat, I have to have a prayer request for Benny in Mississippi. Benny called, asked for sincere prayer for his health, spiritual and physical, please. Benny, Mississippi, is a fine gentleman. Please keep Benny, please, you prayer warriors, in spiritual for his spiritual health and physical health. And Mr. Pat Boone is going to be in a movie coming out, folks. And you can go watch it. It's entitled American Miracle. American Miracle Movie. Our Nation is No Accident. Mm-hmm. It will take you, its audience, on a journey through some of the most significant events in America's birth and rise to prosperity and power. Inspired by New York Times bestselling author Michael Medved's book of the same title, this exciting, entertaining, and edifying motion picture experience has been created in anticipation of the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. It stars, folks, Pat Boone, Kevin Sorbo, which we've had on the program before, Nicole C. Mullen, Cameron Arnott, and James Arnold Taylor, along with authors Joseph Ellis, Richard Dreyfuss, Robert P. George, Akil Reed Amar, and Jana Hope Novick, among many others. So most folks know who Richard Dreyfuss is, I'm sure. And everybody knows who Pat Boone is.
Oh, yeah.
If they don't know who Pat Boone is, I don't know what to say. Anyway, Pat, I'm not going to talk all the way through this. I want to turn you loose. They told me to be sure and get you off in 15 minutes, so I got to follow orders. So I don't want to keep you any longer than that.
Yeah, I can talk a lot longer than that, but that's what they're trying to avoid, I think. I have really had the most astonishing career. I can hardly believe it myself. I keep pinching myself from time to time because of the amazing blessings that God has allowed me to experience.
Amen.
And we really, if we started trying to recount all of them, it would take a long, long time. I mean, for example, two command performances with the Queen of England. Now, not many entertainers, American entertainers particularly, can acclaim one, but two, and the first one when I was in college at Columbia University, having hit records, becoming a teen idol, to my great surprise. I never had thought I was going to do that. But the records, when they happened, they just took off and became million sellers, and there I was. And so I get to go to England and at the invitation of the Queen and sing my rock and roll songs for her and the family, Princess Anne and Margaret, and they were fans. And then I come back 2 or 3, 4 years later for another command performance because of a movie I'd made, Journey to the Center of the Earth, which was having a
I remember that.
Well, that film, yeah, that was really a great, great experience. And see, these things just kept coming, and I can't take credit for causing any of them. It was just God.
Amen.
God was giving me opportunities to do things that I hardly would have dreamed of, but when they were put in front of me or offered to me, you know, I just did the best I could to do what I was supposed to do and make the most of them, and it just kept adding up until finally for example, I and my recording career have recorded more songs than Frank Sinatra.
Wow.
He recorded some 1,500, more than Bing Crosby, some 2,000. I've recorded 2,700 songs.
Oh, my.
And I've got a couple in the charts right now after 70 years of recording. And so, I mean, I never dreamed that was going to happen, and I didn't. I wouldn't have asked or prayed for it because it would have been impossible.
Oh, I understand.
But it has happened. So, as I say, I could talk for a long time, but I'd rather talk about whatever you're interested in. And then, of course, I want to talk about that movie.
Well, we're going
to
discuss the movie.
In which I get to play Thomas Jefferson.
Now, we'll discuss it because we're going to run out of time before you know it, because I was given strict orders by people to turn you loose in 15 minutes. Well, I tell you what we'll do sometimes. You'll say, yes, we'll sneak you in for another broadcast. How's that?
Oh, good. I'll do it. Yeah.
All right. That's great.
Tom, I got to play Thomas Jefferson, but now Kevin Sorbo, good actor, wonderful actor, plays him in his earlier years when he John Adams were having their debates over whether or not they should buy the Louisiana Purchase, which was all of Louisiana, of course, New Orleans, and double the size of the United States.
Yes.
Adams was opposed to it. We don't need any more territory. We got all we can handle. But Jefferson, he added it up. He says, we can buy millions and millions of acres of great new land and resources and pay about 25 cents an acre. Why would we not do that?
Yes.
He won the argument. And, of course, I play him in his latter years, even right up to his death scene. I won't describe it, but it's very moving, I think. But this great father, one of the fathers of our country, the one who is responsible for we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, or I think he says unalienable. To me, it ought to be inalienable, but if he wrote unalienable.
Unnameable,
we'll keep
right,
it there.
Unalienable.
Among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, not the guarantee of happiness, but the equal opportunity to pursue happiness. I mean, this is the man who articulated those things, and on his own monument in Washington says that we cannot escape failure unless we continue to pray for the one who gave us this country. And so
Amen.
This, and that's, by the way, Jefferson, this is not in the movie, but he's the one who established the chaplaincy in the military. He was the one that created the idea that we should have Christian chaplains in the military, tax-supported. Taxpayers would pay for ministers to try to raise the faith level of our military, and they did. And this was Thomas Jefferson, who later, you know, people tried to claim was separation of church and state. meaning that the church should have no voice in government, which was the reverse of what he meant, that government would not have any voice whatsoever in church. But the church, of course, since we were founded supposedly as a Christian nation, church would have great influence on government. So anyway, I get to play the man, and I was really grateful to be able to do it. What an honor.
Well, I'm anxious to see the movie. I truly am. I hope when it comes through the first 1,000 theaters, it's such a hit, there'll be a 10,000 more show it. I've got to watch the trailers, all I could see, and it's very well done. I mean, it's professionally done. I was really shocked.
Oh, yeah.
It was very well done.
It's not an amateurish thing, no. It's very well created and produced and acted, if I do say. And Kevin Sorbo is a great young Jefferson. By the way, when I was planning and reading the script of all the things I was going to say as Thomas Jefferson, I had to call the director and say, you know, I just realized that Thomas Jefferson was a Virginian. And does that mean that I should have a slight Southern accent in when I talk as Thomas Jefferson? Because he was a Southerner. And he said, yes, by all means. He was talking Elizabethan-type language, but with a Southern accent.
Well, you know, you said, as you spoke before in the air, that he said you detect the Southern accent in me, too, I guess. But anyway, it happens. It's okay. But I'm so excited that you got to be part of this movie. I'm anxious to see the whole movie put together. The parts I've seen, and by the way, I have George Washington on after you, by the way, will join us on the air to discuss the miracles that happened in the Revolution. So you go ahead and share some more you want to share, because I love listening to you talk about it. Go ahead.
Well, of course, what people need to keep remembering and never forget or lose track of, that the founders were building their idea of this nation as they separated from Great Britain, as a new Israel. And they were looking in the Bibles. They were all church members. They all had to have Bible educations in their colleges, because every college or university in those first days in America were Christian colleges.
Absolutely.
And you were not expected to graduate from college without a full knowledge of the Bible. And so that influenced everything. That's why they said we're all created equal and with equal rights. And they came up with all the directives that were so foreign to the kingdoms that were ruling the world at the time. But this was to be a nation of, by, and for the people, quoting Lincoln. But what they intended was that we be something like a modern, more modern-day Israel, and we would live by Bible principles. So, and they expected that this is what the people were wanting, and therefore the Constitution provides for everybody to have the freedom to live and practice their faith, because they assumed that we were going to be a faith built and a faith exercised nation. Well, I know that if they could be, they'd be rolling over in their graves see where we are, where Barna and the other posters tell us that fewer than 50% of Americans go to any place of worship or belong to any faith organization, and or even pray. If they do pray, they're not sure anybody's listening. And we are a divided nation.
We are.
If we don't agree with somebody, then we hate them, and we put them down, and we blaspheme them. And I mean, we've got to try to get back to the nation that was created. And as de Tocqueville, the historian, said, America is great because America is good. If she ceases to be good, she'll cease to be great.
Well, it's happening. It's happening. It's happening right now.
Yeah,
very quickly. It's happening.
We're headed in that direction. And I don't know if you're familiar with a song I wrote, which has been big on the charts called Where Did America Go? But I patterned it consciously on Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind. And it has become a big hit on radio all over the country and with hundreds of thousands or even millions of listens on those music servers on the television and on the internet. But it's a, Where Did America Go? Land of the brave and the free. Can one generation erase a great nation? Because we can't find the way to agree. We can't find a way to agree. And it goes on from there. Where's America gone? Like Abraham, Martin, and John, we silenced their voices and gave up our choices. Do we have the strength to move on? It's a song that, and thankfully, it has become a big, at least airplay hit. Who's buying records these days? I don't know. I mean, it's to keep writing songs and making records seems futile when the only things that actually get sold to make money are naked women and kids and profanity every kind of thing to try to be popular.
Pat, you know, I grew up in the I was born in 48, grew up in the 50s. I remember you very well. Mm-hmm. You're always wholesome and clean cut, and I always enjoy that. You set an example before the young people that you don't see today. I mean, it was a whole different world when I grew up back in the 50s. I know that you get a few years on me.
I wasn't doing it for show. That's just the way I was raised, and I was living. I had four daughters by the time I graduated from college. Age 23 at Columbia University, magna cum laude, but I had four daughters, and I knew that I had the responsibility to raise those four girls. Forget the fact that I might be a teen idol influencing other people's teenagers. I was going to have four teenage girls at the same time, my daughters. And so we tried to live. I told Shirley when we moved to California from New Jersey, we were going to live by Tennessee standards because we were from Tennessee. She said, what does that mean? I said, we're going to be in church Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. We're going to have Bible reading in our home. We're going to have prayers before the girls go to school, even though they're going to nice Beverly Hills schools. And we're going to live exactly as we would live in Nashville if we were still there.
You know, you are radical. I love you. I love it. And Pat, I promised Dane and others I'd have you off the air in 15 minutes, and I don't want to rush you off, but I want to keep my word.
I understand. Believe it or not, I'm still here. I am at 91, just turned 91 yesterday, and that means I've lived 91 years, of course.
Yes.
So I am with these records that are on the charts, the movies that are coming up. I did recently do a movie where I played an old golf pro, and I got a Best Actor Award in the Canadian film industry in inspirational films, playing this old pro, a golf theme, but with a gospel purpose in it.
Amen.
And so anyway, these things keep happening, so as a result, I'm making lots of phone calls and answering lots of calls and doing interviews about all these things, which I want people to know, and I want to advertise it. Even at my age, I feel like I'm like a toothpaste tube, and I want God to squeeze
the last little bit out. May I have you again sometime?
Sure, I'll be delighted.
I will do that if they'll let me get a hold of you. Well, yeah, we'll have you on again sometime. I like to get more details.
You'll have to catch me. I'm always on the run, but I have slowed down considerably.
Well, I'm 76 years old. I'll try to catch you. But God bless you, my friend.
Oh, you're a kid. You can catch me.
I love it. Say it again.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I will be in touch.
God bless us. God bless our country.
Amen.
And God bless us, everyone.
God bless you, Pat. I'll talk to you in the future if God allows, I promise.
Okie doke.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Pastor. Bye.
Bye-bye. I tell you what, folks. There goes that. I've never spoken to him before, ever, on the phone or any other way. But you can tell by his countenance and by his words, he's a prince of a gentleman. You can see that. And he actually cares. There's nothing aloof or arrogant about that man. He's just like you and I, down to earth. Now we're going to talk, as soon as Todd gets me up, we're going to talk to General George Washington, if we can. And we're going to do our best to get this thing up and run with him and talk to him about the movie, of course, American Miracle, Our Nation's No Accident. We already went through that already, and the stars in it. We're going to discuss some of the beautiful miracles that happened during the Revolution. Now, Marcia and I, many years ago, drove from down central West Virginia all the way to Columbus, Ohio, on our own dime, and spent several weekends studying American Christian history. American Christian history. No, the people who found this country are not perfect. No. There are no perfect people but Jesus Christ. But these men and women had a desire to do something different for the world. And as Pat just told us, they founded it as a new Jerusalem. A new Israel. On the principles of that God rules in the affairs of men. And again, I'm not getting our details about anything other than what we're discussing tonight, the miracles that brought this country forth. And General Washington, are you there?
Sir, I am at your service.
Well, thank you so much, my friend. I appreciate it. Thanks for joining us tonight. I do appreciate it very much. And we discussed with Pat Boone about the movie some, and we discussed some of the people that was in it, Kevin Sorbo and some others, Richard Dreyfuss. But I want to talk to you from experiences that you saw and went through during the Revolution. I want you to share with us, please, tonight, as thousands of people listen all over the world, what you went through, and tell us how this nation was formed and how you saw the hand of God working not only in your life, but in our nation's creation. Could you do that for us?
Well, sir, I am not known for being a great orator, and if I were to try and enumerate all the many times that we saw the hand of the divine during our revolution and the rising up of our republic, I'm afraid that we would be here all night. But I will certainly endeavor to try and describe a few of the occasions that occurred throughout. I've often said it was worse than a heathen that did not see the hand of the divine in not only our revolution and the success there, but in the rising up of our nation. There is no reason to have thought that we would ever see success. We were faced against what is known as truly the finest military force in the world, the British Army, and the finest naval force in the world, the British Navy, supporting them. And so the thought that we, who were merely colonies at the time and then later states, that we would somehow see success in our efforts when we had not the means, not the people, nor the weapons, the finances, the wherewithal to endure such a conflict. And then to do so for 8 years, and then see ourselves victorious at the end. That in itself, I think, should be testament enough to the miracle that occurred. But, of course, there were many along the way as well.
I want to add one thing, please, General, if you don't mind. Eight years. 8 long years. The stamina that it took for you and others who sacrificed everything for that long, for the sake of their children, grandchildren, and posterity, is amazing. 8 years is a long time to fight a battle that you didn't think you had a chance of winning in the first place, but for the hand of God. Go ahead.
Well, of course, when we began, we thought we were fighting for our rights as free British citizens, and we were disabused of that notion within the first year of that conflict. But my good wife would also agree with you that it's a very long time for a war to occur. We, of course, had seen long struggles before. We had seen the French and Indian War that took well near that long. And we, of course, when we began, thought that I know that I wrote home to my good wife that I thought I would be home by the fall. I thought maybe a few months. And then I told her that I should be home in time for Christmas. And I did make it home for Christmas. It was just 8 years later than I anticipated.
Well, please, but, from what you experienced yourself on the battlefield and the things you saw, the miracles of the hand of God that I studied in the past in quite a bit of detail. The miracles that God performed to preserve you and your army. Please fill us in on some of the things that you experienced personally.
Well, yes, of course, it is the work of many many hands, the raising up of a nation. So I hesitate to speak only of my own experiences, but those that I did see, of course, I can bear witness to. One that always seems extraordinary to people's minds was when we were trapped upon Long Island. We had already seen defeat in battle, and we thought that we were perhaps set to soon be defeated completely. Now, you must recall at this time, the army was the revolution. We had Congress, and we were the servants of Congress. But if the army was captured or destroyed, that would be an end of our revolution immediately. And here we were upon Long Island, in a small jut of land, and we knew the British only hesitated to continue their assault on us because they knew that they would be able to finish us in the morning. And it seemed as if there would be no escape. There were terribly strong winds that were blowing a storm across, and it was blowing the ships of the British also. It was blowing against them so that they could not come down and fire upon us. But as soon as that wind changed, we knew the ships would come down, and they would find us upon the beach. They could destroy us from that side, and the army upon the other side, as it were. We were trapped between two terrible circumstances. And the decision was made that we would attempt an escape from there on Long Island to the island of Manhattan. And that time, we would set our forces to making it look as if we intended to entrench and encamp. And in the rain and in the storm, a fog descended. Now, I do not know how much time you have spent out looking at those things, both weather and astronomical, etc. But the idea of there being great wind blowing and a fog settling, these are two things that do not occur together ever in my experience, except for this time. And here we were upon this beach, again, prepared to be destroyed. Our only hope was some type of miracle. And a fog descends. The wind is still keeping the Navy where they cannot come down upon us. The fog descends so that we cannot be seen. And boats are brought across from Manhattan Island and take all of our forces across. I was in the last boat to come across, and I had received word just before I boarded that all the boats were getting across. And upon the other side, on Manhattan side, the air was clear, the water was calm, and everyone arrived there as if they had been delivered from a great storm on the other side in peace. Now, if that does not give you a hope that you are at least seeing the divine hand moving on your behalf, I do not know what will, but that was but one of many times during the war that we saw circumstances. How is it that we could cross the Delaware when we had three different forces that were meant to cross as we were approaching Trenton? Only one got across. We were supposed to come and arrive long before dawn so that we could attack before they rose, our enemies. And yet our delays throughout the night, there was no ability to get so. So when we finally did arrive, it was far into the morning. How is it that the Hessians did not know that we were coming? Now, I've heard people say that they thought that they were celebrating Christmas and were in their cups, too much drink. But this was not the situation at all. Christmas had passed now, and I shouldn't say that. Christmas had actually just begun, as it was the first day of Christmas. But they were not at all looking as if they had been drinking. And they were just surprised. And our forces managed to an incredibly swift capture. The only deaths we saw that night were two men who stopped moving and froze.
Oh. It was that
now,
cold.
Again,
it was that cold.
Indeed, sir. Indeed. Yes, it was a night when one does not hesitate to keep moving. And then, of course, it was only a short time later, there was the Second Battle of Trenton, Sunpink Creek, and then on to Princeton. Again, we managed to escape from a Sunpink Creek and make our way to Princeton, where we were able to attack. And there was a circumstance where Men were beginning to retreat. I saw what was occurring, and so I rode in front of our men so that they might feel emboldened and intrepidous. And so I began a charge across the field, and I told them to parade with me. The men saw what was about to occur. The British lowered their muskets. Now, this is a circumstance I must explain, because there are those, including my good wife, I'm afraid, that have from time to time said that I was perhaps more rash than I should have been, or that they say that they felt I had some strange courage. And I do not feel that I have any more courage than the man next to me. I was raised with an understanding that if you are to see success or failure, if you are to live or die, that is not within your control. That is in the hands of the divine.
Amen.
What we do have control over is what we do with the situation that we have been given. And it has been something that has been driven and taught and written into me from the days of my earliest youth, that one must do what is right. Whether you see success or failure, that you cannot decide. But you can decide to do what is right. In that situation, of course, I saw that the men needed to be rallied so that we might charge. The enemy lowered their weapons, and I, of course, was the most forefront of the targets that they might fire upon. They lowered their weapons. We began our charge. I understand that some of our men actually turned their faces away because they feared that I would not survive. The volley began as one complete echo of explosion across the field. And the smoke was everywhere. But of course, not a musket ball found its purchase. And so we charged across the field and saw victory that day. Again, one must look to the Almighty and give thanks. Amen. And that is something that I have always encouraged both our army and our nation, is that we must have a heart of gratitude. We must always encourage a heart of gratitude towards that great being that is the decider and author of all the good that ever was and all the good that ever will be.
Well, Mr. Washington, didn't you experience something similar to when you were fighting in a war before the Revolution, or were you battling some Indians or some Native Americans?
Yes, during the French Dindian War.
Yes,
the Battle of the Monongahela with General Braddock. There was not an officer except for myself that was not either injured or killed. It was a very tragic day, including General Braddock himself. He was mortally wounded. And we had to retreat upon that occasion. But when the smoke cleared from that day, and I was a much younger man, of course, I was in my early 20s at the time, there were four bullet holes through my coat. Now, my tailor has never given me a coat that did anything but fit me very well. And so I was as amazed as others were that I had lost horses during that day, and I had holes through my coat, even a hat lost, but not a mark upon me.
Did you at that time, the Native Americans, the Indians definitely thought you were divinely protected, but did you ever consider the fact that maybe God's hand was on you for something greater than what you maybe thought it was?
Well, when I was a younger man, I fell into that same supposition that so many young men do, of thinking myself far more important than I actually was. And I am afraid that it took a good deal of experience in life to show me that I needed more humility. And so at that time, I may have thought that I was a very important person. It took time afterwards for me to recognize that, in fact, God can use any person. And has sometimes, if one looks back upon the records of both history and the Bible, that there have been many times he used people who were far less than what would appear to be worthy or expected. He may raise up anyone at all. A Gideon may be a great warrior, if God so decrees it. And so at the time, I imagine I thought myself to be perhaps able to ride through bullets. It was later on when I truly understood that that was not the situation, and that I was certainly at risk as anyone else was. That is where I would say I would count on that our cause was righteous and that God would see that. Mm-hmm. I do not know that I was afforded any particular protection, but I believe that our cause was.
Well, I do know that the one of the heads of the Indians had said that you would not be killed by a bullet. Can you explain what this gentleman said?
Well, this was some years later. Dr. Craik and I were out, and we were surveying. Now, I was, of course, a surveyor from the age of 16 on, and I say that once one has begun a life of surveying, one never actually ends their life of surveying. One is always a surveyor. I have found that surveying has served me well in my military life, in business, and in farming, in every aspect, even planning out a house. One always finds themselves surveying land and understanding where best to place things, and also understanding a map. And so Dr. Craik and I were out, we were surveying land, and around a campfire, we were approached and met a chief, and he was apparently at the Battle of the Monongahela himself, and he did tell a story, and it would be immodest for me to exactly recite the things that he said, but he did say that he felt that I could not be killed, at least not that day, and that I was protected by a great spirit. And Dr. Craik seems very taken by this. I, of course, have encountered and had transactions with many different tribes over many years, some as a friend and some as enemy, some as neither. But so I was positively impacted by the moment, of course, and was glad to be in the man's company. It was good to see someone else that was a survivor of that battle see things from a slightly different view. But he did seem to claim that at the time he felt that I was protected and wished very much so to meet me. And he thought that I had a future beyond that, but one never knows what credence to give to a prophecy, as it were, of that sort.
Well, obviously, there was some insight, we'll say, with the knowledge he had in the future with what he believes going to happen, because it literally happened. You were spared many times. During the 8 years of battle,
yes, sir.
From what I've studied myself in the past, and I have studied in some depth, the men suffered tremendously with a lot of lack of supplies, not just ammunition and powder, but food and clothing. Can you tell us something about that, maybe what happened maybe at Valley Forge or something along those lines? Give us some examples, please.
Well, the Valley of the Forge, many people think was our coldest and hardest winter, and that is not true. That would be Morristown, New Jersey. But what was so terrible about the Valley of the Forge, and that is, of course, still early in our war, is I had chosen this land strategically so that I could look very carefully at any time upon Philadelphia and see if our enemies were approaching or if they were planning some type of action, close enough that we could defend ourselves, but far enough away that we would be safe and be able to enter into a winter camp. It was also a farmland surrounded by farms, and I anticipated we would have all the supply that we would need. What I could not anticipate was that the Congress's money, I'm not sure, are you aware of the Continental Dollar and its value?
Oh, yes, yes.
Yes.
Yes,
it was. Congress created paper money instead of, of course, they guaranteed it, saying that one could exchange $1 of continental money for $1.
Was that not where the saying come, not worth the continental come from? Please go ahead.
I've lost you, sir.
Oh, I said,
they're
saying that it's not worth a continental. Wasn't that where the saying come from eventually?
Quite right, sir. They, yes. of course, Congress had no money for themselves, and so they had no silver, I should say, to back that money. So it very quickly devalued. And it was at one point during the war that we you could have almost 300, 400 continental dollars to buy $1 of silver. And so as it lost its value, the farmers, they wished to do business with the British, who were paying in specie. They were paying in gold and silver. And so as they had coin and we did not, they thought they would prefer to sell, understandably, against their best interest to the British. And so those goods were disappearing. I did eventually have to have the men start to acquire some of the property. Always paid for it, but we had to set our prices far lower than the farmers would prefer. But I had an army to feed, and of course, not only food, but also weapons and clothing, medical supplies, all necessary. And we were without. There is a misconception, however, that as the war went on, supply became ready, and that we were able to uniform all of our soldiers. There was never a time throughout all the years of war that we had an army that was completely uniform in their uniforms. The French said that we did not look like an army, but indeed we did fight like an army. You could look across the field, though, at any given time, and you might see blue uniforms, brown uniforms, white hunting shirts, of various colors, green coats. There were even red amongst our troops. In fact, at one point, we had captured British coats during a privateer engagement, and these red coats, we dyed blue. But by midsummer, they were all purple. And so if you can imagine an army that looks like every hue of the rainbow out upon the field, that you cannot tell which side they are on unless you look to their flag, that was our army. And, of course, quite often in uniforms that were in terrible condition. During the Valley of the Forge, there was many a time that if there was one man to stand guard duty, all the men within his cabin would donate an article of clothing to make sure that one person standing guard duty had a complete uniform.
My goodness. And how did you keep the men's morale up?
That is something that was an ongoing struggle. And I can say that winter encampment could sometimes be the worst. If you can imagine that even though they are away from battle and the hardships there, and their spirits would decline greatly. My good wife was always attempting to raise the spirits of the troops. During Valley Forge, of course, there was also an evening when, well, they ended up doing more than one evening because in order for everyone to see it, but the officers put on a performance of Cato. I'm not sure if you are aware of Cato, sir, if you have read or if you have seen Cato performed on a stage.
No, I have not.
It is a tragedy, the story of Cato, who, of course, opposed Caesar. And eventually, he decides to take his own life rather than submit and become a slave of Caesar. This is where we get so many of the great lines that have been said on the stage and read from the books, like it is... It is a sad thing that we have but one life that we might give in the service of our country. That of course, has been said more than once quoted by many a person. But this is a play that is full of virtues and full of the virtues of liberty and the importance of fighting for your rights and liberties. And as I said, it is a tragedy when it is performed normally, but our officers saw fit to change the ending, and so at the end, Cato defeated Caesar in battle in our version of the play.
Well, I like that end better anyway. That's a better ending. Now, I do know from what I've studied about some of your life that you believed in prayer, and I think that you would slip away from the, I guess you say, the hubbub of all that's going on around the camp and slip off somewhere by yourself and talk to the Lord about things. And that also happened at Valley Forge, did it not?
prayer is always something that I've felt was, unless one was in church, is something to be done privately. I do not remember any more at Valley Forge than at any other place, but I have I've said and stated publicly that I believe that we needed to be a people that were in prayer and in thanks to the Almighty for all that He is doing for us and all that we might ask, and that we should be a people that does not forget their prayers. To that end, I made sure that we had regiments of chaplains throughout our revolution. And those chaplains served very, very well, not only upon divine services on Sunday, but they also served the men during the week, not just in prayers, but sometimes, when necessary, picking up their own muskets as well.
That in itself is, in my mind, a miracle with what I experienced today in this country. I'm not sure that we will see that happen again. So I really admire a servant of God, we'll say a pastor, a preacher, evangelist, who would stand side by side to defend his country, his family. That, it, to me, is a very admirable thing. So as you went through this, and by the grace of God and by His might and power and deliverance, you made it through this war, and we understand the course now. We know that the war was eventually won. But that didn't end the battle for the country, did it? I mean, when the war, we'll say the war ended, coming together as a nation was a challenge in itself, wasn't it?
More so than I think anyone could have anticipated. Even at the end of the war, there were those amongst the officers who had not been paid in some 3 years that thought that perhaps the next action to take would be to march upon Congress to seize control of the seat of government and to force the states to pay the money that they owed to the soldiers. And in this atmosphere was when our army disbanded, and these disgruntled officers went home. There was great concern about what would occur next. We've had the Articles of Confederation in place, and they were serving, but not well. There was great need for a stronger government, and I was very aware of this. I myself took it upon myself to begin looking for ways to forge communication and also commerce with the Western territories and in between all of the states. I felt that if we did not, that we would see divisions begin amongst geography and the frontier itself and idealistic lines. If you were upon the frontier, you might be along the Mississippi River. Do you find yourself, if you are closer to Canada, you might decide that you are more aligned with the British, or if you are further down, you might be more aligned with the Spanish or even the French, depending upon what part. And so, how do we make sure that we have bonds together, that we are one, truly one people? And our government was not adequate to that. And so the begins the struggle our government would look like.
You were going to unite different sovereign countries into one nation. And they were considered sovereign, and to an extent they still are today, supposedly. But they were considered sovereign. Ooh. And they each had maybe their own type of trade, their own money system. What a chore y'all faced.
So some of them had their own navies. Almost everyone had their own militia, and so their own army. Their own money, in some cases, for instance, Rhode Island, they had a very unique system where you came to Rhode Island, and in order to engage in commerce, you had to exchange your money for Rhode Island money. You could not use any other in Rhode Island. And then when you left Rhode Island, you could not exchange it for any other money, which meant money flowed in and did not flow back out. That's just one of the reasons they were very hesitant to join our new union and constitution. It cut into their commerce that they had created cheap money, as it were.
And it worked for them. It worked for them.
Oh, yes. And, not only that, but sometimes there were differences of faith. A person who was a Quakerman from Pennsylvania might feel very little inclined to engage with a person from the Anglican background in Virginia, or perhaps the more puritanical views of those up in Massachusetts. For instance, different laws, they'd have no theater in Massachusetts at the time. And we down in Virginia found ourselves very much enjoying it. There was a time in Massachusetts where they would charge you with a crime if you were to take the day of Christmas as a holiday. And in Virginia, of course, we celebrated Christmas very readily. So very different ideas, very different people, different ways of speaking, and, as you said, different commerce. And so, yes, these states that had all been very independent themselves, we found ourselves very much in need of a central government that could unify them and bring us together. And as I said many times, we are either a united people or we are nothing at all.
That is true. Unfortunately, in today's modern days, we're seeing the nation divided in so many different directions. We're going to run out of time so quickly here. Let me get the people. Folks, write this down, please. Write down AmericanMiracleMovie.com. AmericanMiracleMovie.com. Watch the trailer. You can order tickets also there. If you find a theater near you, please try to go. If enough people will go to this movie, they will expand it to more theaters. I think this is worth going to see. We know what's happened to America since this day. But that doesn't change the fact of how it was founded and what the ideals of people were in the days when this was happening. AmericanMiracleMovie.com. Please do check it out. I think you'll be very interested. Also, type in MeetWashington.com. Meet, M-E-E-T. MeetWashington.com. Check that also. Tonight we're talking to the General George Washington. He's also has a part in this movie. I think you'll find it very interesting. And I'm honored to have him share his knowledge with us tonight. And obviously, he's well-versed in it and what happened. Now, we're down about the last 4 or 5 minutes here. Very quickly, summarize how you pulled a nation together. And, I mean, it didn't happen overnight. The war is long over before you pulled this together as a nation with the Constitution. What did you do in the meantime to keep it together?
Well, of course, that was the difficulty, as we saw it beginning to fray in the years after the war. And so we began to look for a time that we might come together and meet. We had done so before the war as the Congress. And, of course, our revolution was born out of that Congress. And so we again came together in a federal convention and discussed, which you can well imagine was not an easy discussion, so many different ideas of how a nation should be built. And it was through compromise and understanding and listening to one another. You were saying contention, sir, that there is a current contention. This is one of the most important things that built our nation, is that we, of course, as we've said, prayerfully and with attempting to do what is right, we came together and discussed and heard each other, listening to each other's needs and ideas, and sometimes very much so disagreeing, but we could always find a way forward as long as we looked at each other as being fellow Americans and found places where we could compromise.
Well,
of course, there are things that you can't compromise on.
That's very true. And I believe I'd be safe in assuming this and saying this, that there was at least at that time a strong moral fiber. Everybody didn't agree on everything. That's obviously true. But the morality of the people overall was pretty much in common, was it not?
People have different manners and different beliefs, but there is certainly an understanding of what is decent and good behavior and what is right and what is wrong. And that is a place. There's a word that actually is in the Declaration that set us on our path far more than you might imagine. You've heard about the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness.
Yes,
it is very much so our belief, as we were all well versed in both the Scriptures and Stoic philosophy, which both talk about virtue. And it is the belief of ours that only through being virtuous can one be happy. So when we discuss a right to liberty and the pursuit of happiness, we are not talking about the pursuit of pleasure. We are talking about the pursuit of doing what is right so that you might find happiness.
That is very well said, General. Very well said. If only we could get the masses to hear that, believe it, and exercise it, we would see a nation unified once again with the authority of God's moral laws in charge of the nation. That would be a wonderful thing to see. We're down by the last minute and a half. Give us some parting words, please.
Well, I would say that do not allow the spirit of party to divide you. And as I said, a spirit of gratitude. A spirit of gratitude towards the divine for what he has given us, the opportunity. We spoke always of posterity. And if the American people are not completely free and happy, it will be no one's responsibility but their own.
Amen. And I believe in your final speech as president, you said that the two-party system could destroy a nation. Did you not refer something along those lines?
Very close to those words, sir. Yes, the spirit of party is very destructive to liberty.
Very well said. Very well said. I don't want to add to this, General Washington. It's been an honor to talk to you tonight and speak with you and let you share some information about the revolution most people probably didn't know, and share it in such a way that it showed the character, I think, of most men in that battle. And I'm sure that you were honored to serve with many of those men.
So
want to thank you for joining us tonight, and maybe we'll do this again sometime in the future if you'd like.
Oh, it'd be my great honor, sir.
All right. Thank you so much, and God bless.
You enjoy the balance of your night. You as well,
sir. All right, folks. I mean, that's what can we add? Obviously, that was not General Washington in the flesh. That's the gentleman that plays Mr. Washington, General Washington, in the movie. And I hope that you'll see that, because this man obviously knows what he's talking about. I think you'll find this a very interesting movie to see, and I hope you will take time to go see it. And the gentleman's name was Dan Shipley, and I think he did a marvelous job bringing forth facts that a lot of people didn't know anything about. Obviously, he studied history in some detail. I hope the next program maybe touched you somewhere. Tomorrow night, we'll go back with a regular guest with Summer Dre tomorrow night and Larry Pratt on Wednesday night. But I want this tonight's program to be something special that you would enjoy. I'm glad you joined us. Go to AmericanMiracleMovie.com. God bless. Good night.
Hear me what I'm saying. Pick up your sword and shield. And on the battlefield, Satan's armies come to kill. This is war. Satan's army roams the land, seeking souls of fallen men.
Melody Cederstrom and CSC Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSCTalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.